I'm taking it from you. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the show. This is Chanel.
Wow.
And this is We Was Detective. And here's your other host.
I don't know what to say. What the hell was that?
Say your name.
I'm Brandon, and we are talking about the finale of True Detective Night Country. Part six is the name of it. Part six.
Yeah, they don't give a fuck. They're like, well, here goes the story, yo. Welcome back to the show, guys. I'm fired up about the different topics we were talking about pre-show.
You didn't even tell me the topics this week.
We just talked about. I'm just going to repeat. So first, here's topic number one. Topic number one is.
Oh, hold on. Before the topics, though, you got to let them know that you can rate us and review us. Please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you do, we'll read it on the show. It really helps us out, gets us more listeners. You can also email the show at wewasdragonspod@gmail.com, and we'll read some of those on the show. And I think we have an email to read in a little bit that Chanel's going to read. But before that, Chanel has some stuff to talk about.
I have some. First of all, I have to tell you something, Brandon. He was in an Amazon with my mom when she was researching spiders just before she died. Who said that iconic quote?
Oh, you're talking about, it wasn't even the Amazon. It was Peru. Since you said you were going to Peru, it was Peru.
And that's the quote that has the internet on fire. Dakota Johnson, some dude asked her in an interview, like, isn't that a funny line? And she was like, what do you mean? That's the backstory. She was so serious.
That's how she talked in the entire terrible movie.
I can't stare her ass. I love how people just pop up famous and you have to stomach them. And then later on, you get a chance to be like, yeah, I never knew who she was. And I'm glad I didn't like commit to it. Okay, so we have a lot to cover. So I'm going to run through them and then we're going to timestamp it for my guy who got irritated with us. Okay, so somebody reached out a while ago and Brandon talked about it and then I wasn't quite sure at the time, but I'm going to do this because I think it's the right thing to do. So there's a podcast called Native Alaskan Life. No, there's a podcast about Native Alaskan Life called Alaska is the Center of the Universe from the same team who made Midnight Sun, an award-winning audiobook. It throughout the world, Alaska is known as the last frontier, a place to seek your destiny and confront the dangerous unknown. But to natives, it's not a frontier, it's the center of the universe. The host is an Inupiaq storyteller, James Domek Jr., who is on a journey across Alaska to find out what these stories can tell us about how to live today. Emmy award-winning documentarian, musician, audio producer. The series is funny, heartbreaking, bold, and transcendent. And it also features exclusively Alaskan Native voices. So I was trying to get some money for that promo. And then I decided that that's part of my acknowledgement that we're on Native land. I'm just going to read the promo and let it be that. So please go check out that podcast if you want a more serious take on Alaska Native life. As you know, here we just talk shit. So we chat a lot of shit and that's all we do. Also, Art had reached out to us asking for other recommendations by other podcasts. And again, we are the funniest one out there, but the other ones that Brandon mentioned before are Prestige TV or The Ringer. And so they do a recap over there. So that's running through the fast stuff. And now we have a bit more to say. So actually, before I get to our last email, we have a 4.3 out of 5 on Apple Podcasts. Please help us out and bring that back up to a 4.4 or something. We got another 5-star rating. And just looking at these 1-star ratings, they always get my blood going. Okay, from Ski by the Bay, great perspectives. Brandon and Chanel bring a fresh perspective. Be sure to check out their Succession coverage too. That is a good place to start. So many podcast voices are white and male. And how? It is revealing to hear both the differences and overlap of takes that Chanel and Brandon have versus the regularly homogeneous coverage elsewhere. I love homogeneous. It's a good syllable word. I really appreciate the insight from a new perspective. Thank you, Ski the Bay. Happy Valentine's Day, which is around when you posted this. Okay, that's all the quick news. What else did we talk about before the show? We talked, Jeezy. Yes, Madam Web. Go ahead and tell us give us a quick review of Madam Web.
It's terrible. It's teetering on so bad that it's good. There are parts of the movie that aren't funny that I were laughing out loud in the theater at. There's a scene where she reads about her mom studying spiders, and that if you get bit by this Peruvian spider, that you can get spider powers. And then she goes, She says it, and I'm going to say it just like she says it in the movie. How do you know if you can climb on walls if you never try? And then she walks over to the wall and tries to climb up on the wall, and it just slinks to the ground with the littlest amount of energy that you could possibly imagine. That
Oh.
happened in the movie. Another thing that happened in the movie, I'm spoiling it because none of y'all are going to go see this movie, nor
Yeah,
should
don't do
you.
it.
You know how Spider-Man's famous line is, "With great power comes great responsibility." Everyone knows that. Even people who don't watch comic book stuff
I
knows
mean, I
that.
don't know if Spider-Man wrote it first, so yeah, I agree.
In this movie, when Madame Web, when Cassie goes to Peru and she talks to one of the natives there who saved her mom by putting them in a natural spring and making a spider bite her, well, technically saved her enough that she could be born. She flies back to Peru in the middle of the movie. While she's supposed to be protecting these three girls, she goes, "I'm gonna be gone for a week," and flies back to Peru to go in the jungle. The native guy comes and says, "I knew you would come back." And he says to her, he says to her, "When you take on the responsibility, great power will come."
He said, "ChatGPT, rewrite this so it doesn't, it's not plagiarism." That's literally all he
But they don't
did.
even have to do that because they own the rights to Spider-Man. They own his rights.
Love
In fact, Ben Parker, Uncle Ben, who always dies, was in the movie. Our guy, Adam Scott, who
Oh
was a
yeah,
great
it's like a
actor from
yeah, it's like a
Severance,
prequel to it's a prequel to
was wasted as
yeah.
Ben Parker in this
From
fucking
Severance
film.
and Loot. Loot on Apple TV. Good show.
I've never seen Loot. Is that good?
And yeah, it's really Maya Rudolph. It's like a feel good. It's almost rom-com territory. It's good. And I love Angela Rodriguez. Okay.
So
So
yeah, don't go see that movie.
don't go
Just
see
don't
it,
do it.
but it will probably be a classic in some point in time because, like you said, it's like, how did this get made? Okay. So what we're going to do with this episode, oh, so this is my last pre-topic before this, and then timestamp it for 12 minutes and 43 seconds. I don't know how long it's been. I just realized that Jeezy just did a Tiny Desk, and shout out to him. Congratulations. I love NPR diversifying. I love them focusing on Black music. I celebrate Black History Month for sure, so we're good with that. But it's so funny seeing him rebrand back to Thug after trying to clean it up, and it's just like, I support Jeezy. I haven't heard him do anything like to harm a woman. Like, I don't know all the details about the breakup and the marriage and all that. So in general, I'm not like, I don't hate this man, but I do think it's funny to kind of like, he's kind of Miley Cyrusing right now. And we'll see where this goes. But I think I would definitely enjoy the Tiny Desk because he has some classics. And one thing about Jeezy is he was like an honorary Detroiter. Him and then
Oh, okay.
the way that we played him. No, the way we played him growing up was like he was from Detroit. So why are you shaking your head?
There's nothing Detroit about Jeezy. Nothing.
What did I just, did you hear me say that word in front of it that starts with an H? I say he's an
Honorary
honorary
usually
Detroit.
means there's something to connect you to this person.
Right. What I'm saying is that we played his music as if he was one of ours. Like that's music I grew up listening to. Anyway. I'm gonna let you mind your DMV business.
Because
Okay,
the
so we
South
have
won.
some. What we're gonna do? The South is a great place. A lot of people like the South. I was watching it. Speaking of stuff we were watching, I was watching God. Oh man, what is it called? What's God got to do with it? No, it's a documentary on Hulu that actually I definitely recommend. It's like one of those 2-hour watches. I was
Freaknik.
watching it. No. No, it's called God Forbid, the sex scandal that brought down a dynasty. And it's about Jerry Falwell Jr. and how he used to like to get cucked, him and his wife. And
Oh yeah.
they ran Liberty University, which is a Christian college. And like you think it's all about that. And halfway through the movie, it talks about how he endorsed Trump and helped him be an evangelical candidate and how
Yes.
like they've been into that since Reagan and which we know, but like I didn't know a lot of it is about that. And it's a really well done documentary. So definitely like you come for the sexy details, stay for the like points being made. And so the reason why I
Liberty
bring it up.
University recently invested a ton of money in their athletic program. They used to be like Division One Double A, like low. They used to be Division Two, then they went to Division One Double A. Now they're Division One, and they've invested and they've created. They're paying their coach like a ton of money to get like a high name coach, and they're investing in
I'm
NIL
about to
money
get
to
deep.
pay the players. But they're doing it for this stuff that you're talking about. They're doing it to push their right wing to get a bigger platform, and they think they can do that through athletics. It's really
I
kind
heard
of
that
an interesting thing.
they're in talks with Deion Sanders.
No, he ain't going there.
Okay.
That would never happen.
But the point, I really do. I'm enjoying the show, and it's talking about. Oh, okay. So they're recording Trump, and it's hard because you try not to laugh, but then Trump says some shit, and you just gotta, like he said, like, you know, a lot of people love the South. He's just talking about how Southerners voted for him. He's like, people love the South. The South is, people like the South right now. And I was like, what does that mean? But then I realized, like, how. If he didn't win and cause other damage and allow people to die,
He would
how
be
funny
funny.
his quotables would be hilarious.
Yes.
I mean, you had to give it 20 years of George Bush's whole is also like meh,
If we
meh,
didn't
like you
take
just
Trump seriously, he would be funny. If
yeah. I mean,
he wasn't as if we didn't have to take him seriously, I should say,
right. Exactly. He'd
he
be a
would be
comedian.
funny.
Because the shit he says. So he's really like somebody's, he's really somebody's Nigerian uncle let loose. That's what he is. He's a
I mean,
Nigerian
he just
uncle
dropped some Air
who mass
Trumps,
appeal. That
some gold Air Trumps.
been baller to the chain. Okay. So
But,
back
oh, I
to
do have one more thing to watch.
go, go.
Have you been watching Curb? Your
No.
enthusiasm? Oh, you forgot about it. I thought you were a fan.
No. We were gonna do a watch party on Sunday and then people it canceled on me, so I just I'm gonna binge.
Thought you were a fan.
I'm gonna binge. I just told you I plan a watch party.
You gonna binge the last season? You're supposed to enjoy the last season.
I'm not a saver. I'm a binger. What you gonna tell me about it? Don't spoil it.
No, I'm not gonna spoil it. It's been funny. I will spoil one thing. It's not a real spoiler, but the first episode was named Atlanta, and you lived in Atlanta, and he was in Atlanta. So I just wanted to tell you that he's going around Atlanta doing
Is
Atlanta
Jeezy in
shit.
it? Is Jeezy in
No,
it?
Jeezy's not in
Does
it.
he throw wings on the ground? Does he throw wing bones on the ground?
He does not throw wing bells on the
Oh,
ground.
okay.
He
Well,
does go to a
then
black
he didn't do
cookout.
it. He didn't do it. Oh, no. Okay. I would pay to see that. I would pay to see that. Him
He
and the
does go to
Elmo
a black.
shit. Did you, were you scandalized by him punching, socking Elmo in the face?
No, I thought it was excellent.
They said Elmo is a child. And how would he, his dad just stand there like that? So stupid. Okay. And then people are like, what about the kids watching? I'm like, what kids are watching the Today Show? Are we okay? And then the last thing I'll say, because we are going to talk about True Detective, is that I have been watch I have been doing a lot of listening to a lot of stuff while I do homework. And one thing that I've like blew through is this audio series called The Academy. And it's on Wondery Plus, and it is Mahalia, the girl who stars in Industry, is like the main voice for it. And it's like a, it's just like it wraps itself up in a nice little story. But I just really ran right through it, and it's about, you know how like they make sex, drug, and crime, and they do it all with like 17-year-olds, and it's like the story would be just as good with college people, but they make them 17 is one of those stories. So anyway, if you want like a kind of a good listen, you can pop that on. I actually got more into it than I thought I would. And moving back to True Detective. So we have the end of our season today. We have a lot to talk about, but we're gonna do it differently than we normally do. So we're gonna give you guys a quick summary after we read this email about this episode. This email does kind of do a summary, and then we'll just talk about the series, and then we'll wrap up the season and let you know now and at the end of the hour that we will take a quick little break in between seasons and we'll be back in March. So from Cynthia, who we heard from before, she says, I know you have so much to say about this show. I give you props. I know you twigged to the situation when you questioned several episodes ago whether the show does really suck. I'll pause there to say I feel great about the show by the end of the finale. And remember how we had that review I read where I was worried because the reviewer was some white guy who literally said he got to watch the whole season and the end of the end of it was predictable. And that's not what I felt about the finale.
Predictable is
Anyway,
not the word I would use.
I,
No.
exactly. That's why I was like, you're, he was like, exactly what I thought would happen. I'm like, that's not true. You did not predict, you did not know everything was gonna happen there. Anyway, so Cynthia says they were already wrong about Alaska and managed to make it worse in the last episode. The caves were basically a basement to the lab. That's not even possible in permafrost. Well, they did say the pollution made it easier, but okay. And why? They just could have had a locked room in that building. That's a fact. I think that they, but I will say at a high level, I think they wanted the mines to be involved. They wanted it to be about the ice. Like I think that the underground thing was a part of the plot device as well, because if it was just a room, then like there'd be a it, or a secret passage or whatever. Which it was technically, there still might be like, oh, why didn't you look at the blueprints? Why didn't you whatever? So I don't know. And then the gratuitous northern lights. They need clear sky to be seen. So apparently the blizzard cleared up really quickly and they swirl and move. They show that when we first see, but then they show them as a static picture in the background. So they were lazy about northern lights. That's fair. So the entire Alaska thing is a joke. Apart from all the other problems of the stupid show being shoehorned into the True Detective brand, they didn't speak to one person who knows Alaska. Sheesh. They also don't even know detective stories. You never introduce new characters at the end who were the culprit and described the most implausible way they did the murders. that could be debated. It's like AI threw together a bunch of ideas and they ran with it. True Detective was always circling the drain and Issa Lopez sent it down to the sewer. God damn. They totally suckered Jodie Foster. How could she have signed on to this level of garbage? I'm hoping there's a very good next show for you to cover. Sticking with you, but boy, am I one pissed off Alaskan. And let me tell you something, who you don't want to piss off is somebody who can live in 60 days a night. Okay. Oh, that's not somebody you want to fuck with. Then she had a follow-up. Pretty sure I'm, oh shit. I didn't know about this. Pretty sure you and Brandon are aware of the massive backlash that erupted after the
I am.
finale.
Chanel's not.
Okay. On this end, completely unaware. It's actually pretty amazing. Sorry I got this got to you so late with the Alaska stuff. Should have been said earlier when details were being discussed. Now it seems irrelevant as I think we're all receiving from having hung on expecting some edifying ending and instead implosion. So the people don't like it. Okay, fair enough. Listening to an interview with Jodie
It's
Foster, it seems
very
split.
polarizing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the
Listening to an
people
interview
who
with
like it
Jodie.
love it, and the people who don't like it are like, there's a lot of people who like the show overall and then were just pissed at this finale, just super pissed.
Yeah, it's just like I think the interesting thing is when you use a place as a setting, and like we talked about, like you're from the DMV, right? So The Wire used Hampstedam, and like you can use Brooklyn, and you can use all these places, but how much are people true to it? And that can vary, but I do think what's more important here is they were talking about native populations that are rarely depicted, and so I think people want an accuracy and acknowledgement. So, listening to an interview with Jodie Foster, it seems as though the big idea was that support workers are invisible to society. Absolutely. And the big enlightening reveal is the cleaning crew rose up and avenged. Yes, that's what the reveal was. Problem is that the, and by the way, I don't think we have the spoiler alert for this. This is the end of the season. Problem is that the show marginalized them throughout and basically did exactly what they're saying they're highlighting as the social issues. That's actually a point of contention for me. They go into way more of the main characters and mostly the white ones. Fair. None of the Alaska, fair. Okay, I see what you're saying now. None of the Alaskan natives get any character developed. Not that anyone really does, but I
Well,
think
no
less of
one
the
does
natives.
except
Right.
Navarro and Liz, to
Yeah,
me.
fair enough. Because yeah, you're right. Because we do just none of the characters grow and change. You're correct. Yeah, even Navarro, other than that, she probably has PTSD and sees and hears things. Okay, another debatable. We actually seem to get the most personal information about Hank. Funny. I don't know if I agree with that, but I get what you're saying. Like he's definitely a part of the plot. And I'm not sure the character had anything to do with anything that was really relevant in the end. Okay. The other thing that is coming out is what a mess was the creation of the story. Jody talks about in the Vanity Fair podcast. Don't go listen to them. They don't. I'll tell you what they said. How writing and rewriting was happening on a daily basis, and there were things we, quote unquote, had to solve, meaning actual actors were chiming in. Somewhere I heard Issa talking about how a team of 4 to 5 writers were trying to work, and then they got the solution from an actor. So this corroborates. What a mess. Looking forward to what you have to say, and we'll catch you on your next show. Thank you. Love you both, Cynthia. Love you back.
Thank you.
So much to thank. First of all, that's amazing context. I think that really helps summarize it. We'll talk again real quick about the plot points and then we'll get into talking about what Cynthia said. So, Brandon, as you know, Hank died in the last episode. His son killed him. Like, Navarro said, Liz, we got to go. So they decided to go undercover of night because they were like, if we're going to go to the mines, now's the time. And I was wondering why they had to do it right then and there. And then I realized the blizzard was covering. Also, if somebody discovered Hank died, then they never have a chance to go do what they did. So they went right away to the mines. Navarro had already figured out we go to the top point and drill down instead of like think about it like an igloo hut and you're on the top and you just go from that point instead of trying to go through the blocked part. And they get down there. They think they're trapped. They keep going and then they find a space that is like formulated. It's almost like the shit from Silo, where it's like formulated, it's corrugated, it's enforced, there's steel down there. Somebody's clearly built this. So we go from the caves where Annie was found. Wait a minute. I did just find a plot hole.
What's the plot hole?
When did she record that video?
What video?
The video they found of her screaming and dying. Where did she record that?
No, she recorded that right there. We know that that's not a plot hole because they show the ceiling and you see the fossils of that mystic, the fossils of that whale or whatever. And in the video, that's how they identified that it was in the cave because they went to talk to the teacher guy and he said, "There's the
Right. But that's
fossils."
not right because they say so. Okay. Well, we'll come back to this.
Yeah,
Put a
it's
pin in
not a
that.
plot hole.
Now I do think it is, but we'll come back because I need to. I don't want to get that far ahead because we're almost done telling. So they find this place and eventually find a ladder and realize, holy shit, this cave that Annie K died in goes right up into Salal. So now they're in the station of Salal, and they like see around the corner that fucking Clark is there, and they found his ass in the cave. So they chase him down and they get confessions out of him. And then they get video out of him, and then Navarro lets him die. But what we and then there we're gonna go back to the confessions, but then they're stuck in this in the station while the storm passes, and we see them like deal with all the memories from before. So the confessions that they found from him were basically that the, and this is where I think the plot hole comes. So apparently, the mine. It wasn't the mine paying them to falsify the data. It was that Salal found that the mine's pollution was doing a good job of global warming and softening the permafrost. And so there, which actually, okay, I guess that checks out scientifically, softening the permafrost so that they were able to find the cure for whatever the fuck they had said, like cancer or whatever, longevity, tuck everlasting. They found that in the ice and it actually was working, even though nobody believed it could because of permafrost and global warming, et cetera. And so then with that data, they kept asking the mine to pollute as much as possible because they felt like, okay, these babies might miscarry and these people might die, but we're finding the key to everlasting life. So everyone in Salal was actually in on that. And Annie, because she was dating Clark and was an activist and an anti-mine activist, started to catch on. And so basically the confession is that one day, Annie came back to the underground cave and started destroying their research. And somebody found her and started beating and stabbed her. So they found her and they stabbed her several times. And Clark heard her, ran down, tried to get her, couldn't save her, waited. Everybody else came and they jumped her and killed her. And he just watched. And then they're questioning him. They're like, why the fuck did you not do anything? And then they're like, so you didn't do anything? And he keeps saying, I didn't hurt her. I would never hurt her. But then we see him go and hold her while he thinks she's dead. And she comes back to life and he smothers her so that she dies. So my plot hole is, at what point did she record a video running from people? Because she was not running from them before they found her swinging stuff.
But you missed the point there. They've done this. So shows do things in threes, right? And so this is the third time we've had someone tell a story about a death or something in the past, and they're clearly an unreliable narrator. What actually happened is up for debate of what happened because there's a lot of things in it. So I think what the story is trying to tell you is like, these are everyone's viewpoint is the people that we're hearing give their viewpoints of things are not reliable anyway. Because if you remember, well, you may not remember this, but in earlier in the episodes when they were doing the autopsy, on Annie, there was nothing in there about being strangled. Nothing. Not a thing about being strangled. It was that she was stabbed to death. It was also,
But she
they
wasn't
also,
strangled. She was suffocated, which is different than strangled.
yes, but they her cause of death was not suffocation. Her cause of death was like blood for whatever they said it was, blood force trauma, whatever. They also mentioned that like she was like stomped out post-mortem, which we don't see here. We see them like beat the fuck out of her and
No, they
stab her.
definitely stomped her out.
Yes,
That's
but
what
she
happened.
wasn't dead. But according to that
I
story, she
think that
wasn't
what
dead.
that's what I'm saying. I hear what you're saying, but I think that maybe it's like a she was near death and like whatever happened to her was already close. Like I don't know how rigor mortis happens, but it's basically like it happened 5 minutes before she died, which is the same physically as afterwards. I don't know
But
why
that's
that would
not the
make.
same. But that's what I'm saying.
Maybe
That's
she
not
was
the
already
same.
bleeding out. Maybe she was already bleeding out. Maybe she was
It's
already at
not
a point.
that. I
I
think is that
hear
these
you.
people
I'm
are
just saying.
unreliable.
Okay.
These people are unreliable, and we see the flashbacks of them say words, and then they show a flashback, and it ain't what the words they're saying. Or they're saying words, and it is what they're saying, and then later on, you see another flashback that changes it, which I think this is a good thing and a bad thing about the show is that they're trying to create intrigue with, do you trust these characters? Do you know what happens? Like, you didn't get to it, but like, is Navarro still alive? Like, who knows? We want you to figure it out. Where did the tongue come from? We want you to figure that out, right? It's like if they're setting up these narratives that they want you to think how true something is. So I don't think that's a plot point. I think it was done. I mean that to say, I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm saying that I'm pretty sure it was on purpose that they did that.
Well, what I would say about that though is I hear what you're saying, and I'm not saying you're wrong. I think another way to think about it though is like there are some plot details. There are some things I think they want us to be okay with not understanding, maybe. But I will say that I don't think it's as much unreliable narrator. I think that the unreliable narrator is one thing. I think the flashbacks are actually true to what happened. And the reason why is because even with Wheeler, we saw multiple flashes of that, but we never didn't see what actually happened. Like we saw a lot of leading up to him getting shot, and then we saw him getting shot, but we never saw him not getting shot. We never saw him like already dead, right? So I think that whenever we do flashbacks, those are true to form. And then what story you hear, because like Clark is lying when he says he doesn't touch her. We see him actually strangle her. So I think that you're right about like we don't know where the tongue is and we don't know where and the video is real evidence, so it must be. But then I also think, like Cynthia said, maybe there's some element of we don't know what's really real. And so I think that makes I think we overlap on that. But I guess my theory would be, I mean, now that I know more, I'm like, maybe this shit is don't make no sense. Maybe they don't have an answer for some of it. And we're assuming it all does make sense. But like you said, Annie dies. We see how she dies. She dies by the hands of the Salaam Men. And so then when we see him, Clark have his seizure and say she's awake, he believes that Annie dies and like comes back to haunt them. And he also believes in like this dark magic, this dark, like dark spirit of revenge for native pain and suffering, which I think I kind of believe in some extent as well. Like I think it's there, right? You can feel the pain. But he believes it's like a real force that could come in and pull your ass out of bed and put you in the ice. So that is what he believes. And so there's a night when he hears her coming for them, and he hides himself in the underground passage and doesn't let anyone else escape. So they all dive at him. And that's how Clark ended up not out in the ice dead. So that answers that. Great. Like you said, we don't have no answer about the tongue thing. Although it's possible though, I do think it's possible to sorry that they oh. Some I don't fucking know who had her tongue. Honestly, I'm having trouble figuring that out
No,
now.
they want you to believe that that's the myth. Like that's the woman, because they refer to the mythical person as a woman. Everyone does. So they want you to believe that this, the woman of Ennis, or the ghost of Ennis, brought that back, because the tongue was real. That wasn't a myth,
Yeah, but
because
it was under the table, which is why it's weird to me.
yes, that's exactly why, who brought it back there, because the
Yeah,
murder was
so
6 years earlier. And the tongue was
Right.
preserved because in 6 years, that tongue would have been, if it was just left out, it would have been
Yeah, I mean, I do believe that there's
recognizable.
ice all over the place. So somebody in Salal could have definitely been a part of it. I mean, shit. Maybe if we go back and look at the sandwiches, maybe dude was about to eat her tongue. Who fucking knows? The dude, because it was in the kitchen. Like, maybe we'll see that if we look. I don't fucking know. Tongue aside, so eventually we see Clark dead in the snow, and Liz is pissed off at Navarro for letting him go. But Liz is like, I got everything I needed from that man. He is a wrap. And so he dies, and then they're kind of they think they might be stuck in the station because the generator won't turn on, the blizzard's knocked the power out, and they have a really spooky like blood, sorry, body temperature dropping, blood sugar dropping situation where we don't, I'm like, okay, I know they're not gonna die, but this is when I start texting you saying, like, I wonder if the mind is making people hallucinate. But basically we get a culmination of all the visions we've seen, and we get Navarro saying again, like, I'm being pulled, I'm being called towards something. And at some point, Liz says, like, shut the fuck up. Like, stop, because she brings up the sun. She says, hold and talk to me. And that's when Liz snaps and is like, please quit fucking playing with me right now. I'm not playing with you no more. Don't bring my son up. Actually, I think this is actually worth trying to play some of it. So I will say that so I'll pull that up now, but we see like this shift. What I do think was beautiful about what we saw here was we see this shift at the end of like these characters going through something in this night in the place. And I think that in itself is worth is like what made the ending good for me is this idea that they really do go through a catharsis and really understand. They really understand. Like, oh, another symbol that we get is that the mom, sorry, Navarro's mom used to love oranges, and so that's why we keep seeing the oranges come at her and fall out everywhere, like on the ice and everything. So her mom's been calling to her in some kind of way. There's also this moment where Navarro is just freezing and she sees Raymond, she sees that moment where Raymond hyperventilates and says she's awake. She sees that as if it's happening in front of her. And so again, it's like you don't know if she's seeing in the past, like what she's, you don't know what the fuck's going on. And so you're kind of just on this ride with her and understanding that like something unsettling is happening. So we're not sure if her sanity is there or not. Meantime, Pryor goes and Rose helps him bury his dad, and she's like, yeah, like this shit's gonna suck forever. I don't know what to tell you. I'll pause there because I found a clip. What did I miss anything so far? Okay, I think. Can you give me screen share? So I think that we, yeah. So we got the like. I'm pushing through it because the other half of this show would just be us talking about it. I'm gonna share my sound and then I just want you guys to hear this clip real quick. Make let's see. My sound is obviously on. Here.
Yeah.
Touch this case. Hey, what are you doing?
Nothing.
Navarro?
There is something out there calling me.
I don't fucking start.
You need to know something.
Stop.
There is more than this, Liz. There is so much more than just this. And it can be a comfort, you know? Julia wasn't wrong.
Julia gave up. All right, I know she's your sister, but Julia quit.
He doesn't really look like you, but there's something in his eyes. Holden.
Shut up.
He's out there, Liz, and he said that.
Shut the fuck up! You don't say his name. You hear me? You shut your mouth. You don't know. But he's trapped in that car. Was he scared? Was he hurt? Was he screaming, Mom? You don't come here and tell me he said. Or I will shoot your sick fucking mouth right off your face. You wanna go out there and die? You wanna follow your ghosts and curl up in a ball and die out on the ice out there? You go ahead, but you leave my kid out of it! Or I will rip you apart. I am not merciful. You understand? I got no mercy left.
I really love that scene. What about you?
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was a good precursor to what was to come.
Yeah, and that's almost like halfway through the episodes, or that's like the second, third, so, or the second, middle of the second act. So anyway, we get a resolution that, like, yeah, there was a car crash. Holden died with her husband, who is Leah's dad. We know that already. But we do find, like, ultimately, Holden's at peace. Julie's at peace. Navarro does feel called to something. And she does, more than once, walk her ass out on that ice, like, out to the ocean. So does Jody, because Jody goes after her, and she hears her son, Holden. Sorry, Liz goes after her and hears the son, Holden. She actually falls into the ice, and we think she's out of here because she just is in the fucking ice. And Navarro has come back from, that is also important. So Navarro has her moment where she's out on the ice, like, for no damn reason. No, she needs to know better. And we get this moment. So as we saw, like, Navarro had this crisis of identity this whole time. Like, is she native? Is she police? And she finally learns what her native name is, which is beautiful. And that's, like, a very touching scene. So that's her mother calling out to her for her to get that. And I think that's, like, very real, because she comes back to reality with that, like, knowledge and groundedness. She saves Liz from the ice, and then they warm up, they get out of the snow, and they come home, and there's, like, a resolution scene. But it clicks at some point when Navarro's talking, and Liz figures out who killed them. So do you want to just explain that part? Like, who actually killed the Salal men and how that happened?
Yeah, the cleaners of the city, of the town, they basically found out about the secret room underground, because they was mopping the floor and the water was just, like, seeking through. And they was like, yeah, that's weird. They went down there. Because obviously they probably asked about what happened to Annie Kay, because, you know, a woman getting stabbed to death is, in a small town like that, it's going to cause people to look into it. So they knew about some of the stab markings. They get down there and they saw some of the tools that basically would have done. And it was like, oh, this is what happened. And so they basically came in, guns a-blazing, made the dudes run out. This is their story. Here, again, this is another story where we don't actually know, excuse me, if they're telling the full truth or not. But they come get the guys, basically threaten them with guns, make them get naked, and run out into the wilderness. And their story is that they left it up to, you know, the ghost or whatever to decide what's going to happen with them. And they died. And so they was basically like, what the fuck y'all going to do about it? And Liz and Navarro was like, Nothing. It was the avalanche. We good. And they walked out.
Yep, that's pretty much it. That's exactly what happened. I think what was really interesting about this was that I hadn't even thought about it because, I was still on that supernatural shit. Like you had said, we really thought it could have even been Navarro, like in some type of deep fugue state. But at the end of the day, I actually think it was satisfying, although I can understand how somebody might feel like, okay, well, what the fuck? Like it's the woman who got beat by her husband in the beginning. And that's why I will say, like, they were invisible and they were secondary characters, but they were not invisible to Navarro. And Navarro always was paying attention to them and their needs, as we saw in like the pilot.
They also teased it
Danvers.
earlier because when they earlier in the season they took fingerprints from the clothes, like when they had the clothes folded up in the initial when they initially found the crime scene, and one of the fingerprints didn't have two fingers on the boots, and they showed us that in the show earlier in the season, but people were looking elsewhere, so didn't really think about it. And then whenever they would talk about this stuff, she would show up. So if you remember when Kavik's friend came to talk about the spirals in the laundromat, she was there
She was
in the
there.
laundromat at that point.
Yep.
She was there when they were talking about that. So they kind of foreshadowed it throughout the season. If you go back and look at it, it wasn't completely random. But I agree with you. I mean, over there were things that I liked about this show and this episode in particular, and there were things that I did not, and I thought were as bad or poor choices. But that's not one of them. I thought that was satisfying, and I thought I understand the idea of developing characters, but I don't particularly think any of the characters, white or otherwise, besides the two main characters, were developed at all. And I thought that was done both on purpose and by necessity, because one my biggest complaint about this show overall, which we'll get to in more detail after the synopsis, is that it was six episodes. And I said this earlier in the season that six episodes is a really hard thing to do in television. It's because it's not 10 where you get to flesh out your story, and it's not four where you can be like a sprint. Like I'm telling 25% of the story each episode and we going through it. And it's like in this middle ground where it's really hard, where you're trying to balance character development, exposition, along with keeping the story moving. And we see it in Marvel shows, which is why Marvel basically said, we're scrapping all this and we're changing how we do TV shows because it wasn't working. It's hard to tell stories in that format. And I think this show suffered because of that.
Yeah, I mean, do you think that 8 is enough?
I think eight is better. I think 9 or 10 is the sweet spot for television. I think. Remember old, like Scandal used to be like 22 episodes.
And it was completely too fucking long.
And there's so
That's
many
how they got
episodes where you
into
just have
8.
filler.
Yeah, that's how they got into like secret agencies and
Yeah.
touch poison to kill the president's son type shit.
And nobody does 22 episodes really anymore, unless they break it up, right? Like you'll see 22 episodes where they do like half the season and then it's like 4 months and you come back for the other half of the season. Where it's almost like two seasons, but they just call it one, that can work. But like the super long things don't work, and the six episodes don't work because you don't like if this show was nine episodes, they probably would have developed a couple other characters. Some other characters would have had more developed. The stuff with Pryor and Kayla wouldn't have felt like it was just thrown in there. Which this, I mean, they had a salute, they had a thing in here, but it was just thrown in there. It was just like, here's this thing that we want to throw in there, but they never really had time to really make us care about that. So the only two people that you care about is Liz and Navarro in this show. And but that's fine to me in a show like this. And the question is, did they make you care about them? And I think they did.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, yeah, I agree. I think I understand the complaint. Like I think it's like the Bagdoll test or whatever it's called, that I should know what the name is. The test to see like, is a woman character actually worth being on screen? Like, does she advance a plot? And I think that We definitely didn't get to know the Native women. Like, they definitely were just on the other end of things happening to them. Like, not quite victims, but like, they were the people whose babies are being miscarried. They're the people who are being murdered. And so we don't see the only Native person's perspective we really get is Navarro, and her whole story the whole time is that she is, disconnected from her roots. So I could definitely see, I can't be mad. I can't be mad at somebody who's like, yeah, that wasn't enough for me. But yeah, so yeah, I think we want to validate that, but that wasn't like my chief complaint. So I think that having them kill, I actually didn't see that coming personally. So that actually
No, I didn't see that
surprised
coming
me.
either. I'm with
Yeah,
you.
that surprised me. And so I was pleasantly surprised that I was surprised, because I feel like it could have easily been like some crazy shit we just never heard of. So pleasantly surprised that it was not some convoluted science thing, weird like magic thing, and it wasn't like some new stuff they made up. It actually made sense. And I think at the end it
Well, we
gave
don't
them
know
the
that.
out.
We
I'm
don't
going,
actually know.
I believe all the flashbacks. I told you that. For
Yeah,
me,
but even in the flashback that they tell us, they just sent them out there in the cold. We don't actually know
I
what
don't know what
happened
you're
to
saying.
them.
Oh, I mean, yeah. No, I think what I'm trying to say is like the idea that an entity called out to them and that's how they went
Oh,
outside. I thought that's what they were going to say, like, oh, they just died or whatever. So now it's like, yeah, of course they were outside. Of course their clothes were folded, right? Of course all these things. And so like, but I think we all agree that once you get out to where, like, whatever the ocean would be, where the Coast Guard's picking up bodies, that's fair game. That's where the spiral ends. I also think it's interesting thinking about how this ties into season one of True Detective and the idea of like the spiral turning into something else. I think if you went back to go watch that season, you'd be like, I kind of get how it connects, but also like that is really making some magic shit up to justify
I
stuff.
think that was another poor choice by this show.
To
I
connect them.
get they I know why they did it, because they wanted people to care, and it worked. This was the most watched season by season of True Detective ever. So like I get why they did it, but it you didn't do it enough to make it matter. It was trying to just throw it in there, and then when you just throw some things in there, it takes away from the story that you're telling. Like if this show was separate from the True Detective narrative, like not in this franchise, it was just Issa Lopez got to do a show that she or a story that she wanted to tell. I think people would have taken it better, because I think a lot of because they made a point to compare this to season one. Like they introduced that into the show, that this was linked to season one. Then you had people comparing it to season one, and when you do that, and it doesn't live up to that, it only hurts your show more than it helps your show. Although the viewership is, that's still a good thing.
Yeah, I mean,
Oh yeah, this is what I
again,
wanted to tell you. I don't know if you saw this, but yeah, season four of True Detective was the most viewed season yet, averaging 12.7 million million viewers per episode. It was the highest rated overall season on Rotten Tomatoes at 92%, even higher than season one of True Detective, but the finale is the lowest rated episode of the series ever. So the finale of season four is the lowest rated episode of any of the seasons ever. So it's kind of one of those, that's kind of how people saw the show. They loved the show, hated the ending.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why I enjoyed the ending was because, like I said, I think that the question marks that I have were not the ones I was worried about ending up with. We got a clear answer on Wheeler. We got a clear answer on Wheeler. Like, the thing that happened there was that Navarro said, you know what, fuck this, and shot him in the head. And I think that now we think about it, that makes sense, because her mother, I think, didn't she say her dad was abusive? And so then her mother ended up dying and would died alone, and there's all this disconnect. So, and she's never been okay with abusers, just like how we saw she put sugar and beer in old dude's gas tank and roughed him up. So, and then we hear, because the whole time, like, Liz is giving her shit about it, because she did point blank shoot a nigga in the head. I can't, like, that is police brutality. That's actually not okay. System checks and
It's
balances.
okay
But
to do it to abusers.
Liz says, I was about to do it anyway. So Like they have that connection where like they are two, they're two completely different women with like the same care for the one that like Annie, like Annie represents so much to them, and I'm just glad they got the answer. Like I'm relieved that they got the answer. So we figured out that mystery, the other mystery. We never had an answer for where the why the tongue is there. I'm still confused about the timeline recording the video. I know what your theories are on that. We
So what do
know
you think
that they
about
call.
Navarro?
Oh, so well, sorry, we just didn't say they called Hank. Hank's the one who's where we already he already admitted he moved the body. I think that the guys cut her tongue out. I will say that is like a symbol. I think here's what I think. So there was a moment where Navarro was like, or Danvers was like, bro, if you leave, just make sure you come back. Like, I know you want to get out of here. Cause like Liz got transferred there as a punishment. Navarro was born there. And so it's like, okay, go explore, but don't forget this is home. And now they have like this bond. All these beautiful things. So I think that Navarro literally just moves and comes back to visit. Like, I don't think it's that, like, I didn't think it was that,
Yes.
like, I don't know if she's alive anymore. Like, they
Well,
were
that's the
asking, like,
thing. Yeah.
and
People
my
were
question
wondering if she's
was,
dead or not. At the end, when she walks up, when Liz is on like that beach house or whatever, the
yeah,
lake
it's almost
house.
like she's hiding.
Yeah, it's almost, well, Liz didn't react to her when she walks up. So people were saying, like, was she actually really there? Type of a
Yeah, so
thing.
here's my thought on it. So they wrap up in the end where like she's doing a deposition basically. So because at the end of episode 5, it was like, okay, it's over for Liz. The mind's about to win. Old white dude's about to win, and Hank's about to win, and she's never gonna have her job again. Like she kills her deputy. It's a wrap. Turns out that Pryor's still fucking with her. He comes in and gives her coffee. He's not pressed. Like his hand is steady on the trigger. Like you ain't gotta worry about Pryor. Okay, that he's a solid bottom bitch. So we got that for Pryor. She's happy. She's good. She's taking care of people. That you know, obviously they stopped. Like they figured out how to stop the miscarriages and like stop the water from turning black. And so she's just like, yeah,
Well, they
Clark
shut the
died.
mine down
Right, exactly. So Clark died.
because Navarro got that filmed confession from Rob. That's the
Yep.
one
So
they
yeah,
threw out.
exactly. So Clark died. She never, but the reason why Clark died, why she let Clark die, is because she actually had recorded him confessing of what they did and how the mine was involved. So as we see the mine close, and we see that with the guy from the beginning, who saw the animals go run off that cliff and the hunter, and then we saw him halfway through when they were looking for what's his name. That same guy is the one, and he's enjoying like the sun and walking through the
Oliver.
fact that the mine is closed. Yes. So we see that resolution prior still there. Leah, we see a flash later of her and Leah spending time together. So they've worked on their relationship. Prior, for whatever reason, Prior went home and said, look, I know you think I'm some dude who will throw a basketball game for a make-a-wish. But that's not me. I'm a cold-blooded killer now, and I'm
I
about to
think
go handle
there.
my business. And when I come back, you better be naked. And
I
she
think the
said,
story they were trying to, well, go ahead. She
and
said,
she said, hurry back, babe. Like for whatever reason, that snapped something to her, and she was like, I'm with this shit. So
I
they
think the
fixed the
story they were trying
relationship.
to tell was that Liz was not his anchor that was pulling him away from her and fucking with him. It was his dad. And cutting that off got him back to the person that he was supposed to be.
I think that's beautiful. I just think it's so funny how she's like, fuck yeah, you're a bad guy now, let's do it. She's like, Ethan Hawke, I'm ready. So anyway, they do that. Leah's resolved, everything's good. Like we got, you know, Navarro knows her native name, which is it. I
I
had
can't
it
say it.
Googled. No, I had it Googled up here for this exact purpose, and it's not here anymore. Senna, it's like Senna. Senna. Hold on. I wrote it down and sent it to you. Hold on, some of my messages. This is important, guys. I want to respect the culture. And I also said, I think I told you I wanted the episode to be named Want Some Coffee. Because halfway through the night. Oh, while they're torturing, what's his name? Like tying him up, they make him listen to Annie scream, and she goes, "Want some coffee?" And I was like, "That's the name of the episode." Sikina Tiach. So, however bad I said that, that's her native name. Navarro gets that, and then yeah, I think the reason why Liz didn't react because the guy interviewing her is like, "Where's Navarro?" And I'm like, "Is she in trouble? Like, What the fuck they need Navarro to be there for? Like, she should be cleared if Liz is cleared. Anyway, she's like, I don't fucking know where she's at. Like, I don't know if anybody's seeing her. That's all rumors. And so she walks out, like you said, on the patio. But I think they were chilling at the Airbnb and she was sipping her coffee and she was looking at the, I don't, I think it's like if y'all are already hanging out, literally, it's so funny you just said that because today I walked into a meeting late, like I walked into a room at the end of the meeting. And I didn't say anything to anybody because everybody saw me. And then my classmate was like, oh, you're not gonna speak? Like, we didn't wake up next to each other this morning. And we were like, what? And he was like, my family says that like the only people you don't speak to all day is who you woke up next to because you're like, oh, I already seen you. But the rest of the people you have to speak or else you're being rude. And I was like, yeah, I think that's what it is. Like they chilling. We just caught a moment of them walking past each other. So in my mind, Navarro's like, I'm not a fucking trooper no more. I'm not fucking with none of this shit. I'm just out here living on the land. I'm here, I'm there. She was already kind of had a reach. She has a reacher energy. I want her to have a spinoff where she just travels around and solves people's problems. But yeah, I think she was just alive and well and visiting her homegirl. I really believe that. So that's how I took it. If Navarro's dead, that would make no sense to me because she why would she be dead? Like, that don't even make sense. Who killed
Well, they said that her new name means the sun that comes after the darkness. So it
right.
would make
But
sense
I
that she
think
would be
that's because,
alive.
yeah, I think that's because exactly. I think that represents night passing, and then they saw it. She finds the name of her, she finds out the meaning of what her name is and the meaning of it right before night ends. And then also she's like Annie K in the mind and all of that was darkness, and she held tight to she was the reason why this case is reopened and resolved, and like her solving that case solved like eliminated the darkness from the town. And it's like she says at the end, actually, I think this is a decent they also the fact that she's able to pin that shit on Hank is so funny. Like they're like, yep, there's footage of Hank getting the fuck up out of here. So yeah, okay. Here it is. Perfect. Okay, one last share. I think this is the one of the best lines to kind of clean things up.
How do you plan on dealing with political unrest in Ennis?
No. Political unrest is not my job. Man, this town was here long before the mine, long before the APF. Long before Alaska was even named Alaska. I'm just gonna show up, do my job every day, like I always do. What else is there?
I like that she's like, this deposition is over. I'm out of here. You asked too many questions. Good evening. But yeah, I think that's poignant. Like, and this is not even the name of that native land. Like, she's like the. I think it's just a very respectful tone to end on because then she start with like, I don't believe in God. I don't believe none of this shit. This is all bullshit. I'm stuck here. And now she's ending with like a reverence for the land, a reverence for the people. She's there to support them. She's remember how she wanted like Leah to just go along and get along so she didn't get killed. Now she's like, okay, I'm not letting those powers that be have power over us anymore. Obviously, she did some crooked shit, but we all are like on her side. And I think storytelling wise, they wrap the story up in a way I didn't expect because of that half bottle episode. Like them being in Salal where everything happened and having all, which by the way, like it is very possible everybody in Salal hallucinated too, right? Like there's pollution, all that chemical buildup, all that shit. But and then there's like that twist and shout narrative that I don't fully understand that kept playing. But I love that they like I think they tied the story up to it very well. And I apologize if Alaskans don't feel supported and seen because that's frustrating to have a show set in Alaska, filmed in Alaska, and it's not true to force. But I did like the show. I'm sorry. I like everything though because it's very hard to make a TV show. Like the fact that they were doing rewrites on the set, that's actually pretty common. I think very few shows don't do that, like procedurals. Like I don't think Law and Order is rewriting on the set, but like I think that things happen, people riff, people improv. Like that's the thing that happens on most sets. And then I actually think it can be a pro to have the writer, the actors have insight, especially someone like Jodie Foster and people who are experienced because that helps them be like, hey, I'm actually living in this moment, acting it, and I feel like it should be something else. So I don't know that to me indicates like a mess of a set, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I thought this I thought this season was overall good. I thought this episode was compelling. I think that's the word. I found the pacing of this episode to be a bit off. I found the I think that it was designed to try to make people wonder about it, but I think it did it in a way that wasn't always good. Like, I think the unreliable narrative thing is a good tool to use, except when you use it over and over again, you're not sure what to trust and what to believe in the show. I found the most implausible thing that I saw on the show was the scientists killing Annie K. Not that they would kill Annie K, because I could believe some men would do that shit, but just how it was shot. It was like they saw Alders just beating the shit out of her. And then all the rest of them just was like, oh, I'm about to jump in. And like, we don't, but like, the scientists aren't actual characters, right? Because they didn't get any development. So we don't know anything about them. So like, the idea that like, nine random dudes, like Brian, random people will just be like, yo, let's do this murdering thing. Like, it seems kind of implausible to me of just the way it was shot. Not that, these people would take out a Native woman and not give a fuck, but just kind of how it was shot, where it was just like, yeah, it was almost like, yeah, let's do this shit. It was like, don't be a menace, when he starts stomping on the dude till he's flat. It was just, and everybody just comes over and just like into it. It felt like that, the way it was shot, where I was like, that seems kind of like unlikely to happen. But then the other part of me was like, maybe it didn't happen that way, because the guy who's telling it is crazy. Like, we know he's crazy. He's clearly leaving stuff out the story on purpose. So like, maybe what we're seeing is not true. And so I think doing that can be a hindrance to the narrative at some point. But I'm with you on a couple of things. I'm with you on, I think Navarro's alive. I am with you on, I like the idea that the unseen women of the town took out these scientists, because, and I think that was done on purpose. I think the idea was that for them to be background, for you to not give a fuck about them, because no one in the town gives a fuck about them. And that's the point that we're trying to say, that,
Well, besides Navarro, and I think that's the part that I
yeah,
like.
besides Navarro, I also think that it creates an interesting dilemma for some people, because I was reading some reviews where some people were like, they didn't like the show, they didn't like the finale, because they made me feel like the scientists were right. Like, they made me be on the scientist side.
Help me
And
understand.
the thought process
Right
behind
about
that,
what?
and the thought process behind that is it worth what was happening in that town? If you could find something that could cure cancer, that could cure all these actual diseases that kills millions and millions of people around the world, of all races, genders, everything around the world, if what it took to do that was that it, for a few years, it poisoned a town, a small town of a couple thousand people, is that worth it? I'm not taking that side. But I was reading where people were like, the way they wrote it, and the way Clark basically said, yeah, we figured it out. And then this activist woman went down there and just destroyed everything. She didn't talk to me about it. Like, this is what they were saying. It was like, she didn't come talk to Clark about it. She didn't ask. She didn't want to find out what they found or what was going on. She just destroyed all of their work that was like this groundbreaking work that could have saved millions and millions and millions of lives. And they were just basically like, the show was written in a way that kind of made me get on the side of the people that I know I don't want to be on the side. These weren't people that were like terrible people inherently. They were like, the show was written in a way to make me be on the side of people that I wouldn't want to be on the side of. And I'm not there, but I can see that thought process, if that's how you looked at it, where you're just like, yeah, I'm not trying to dismiss stillbirths, but they said there were nine stillbirths in that year, something like that. And so the shows, they were basically saying, if I told you, you'd have that nine people would have to deal with the trauma and the unfortunateness and the tragedy of nine stillbirths, but that stillbirths allowed me to save millions of women from having stillbirths, what would you do, right? Like that type of thing. And I don't know if that's a good dilemma to put your audience into, although I don't fall into that. If people do fall into that, I don't know if that's necessarily good storytelling.
By the way, I wish you had said it. If I told you I killed a motherfucker at 16, would you believe me? That's Kendra Horn. I think that that's an interesting thing, but it's like Thanos had a point. You know what I'm saying? Like you see, like Kill. First of all, well, Killmonger was right, so that's
no, he wasn't. No, he was not. No, he was not. We had to do a whole podcast on that. I hate when people say that. He had a point. He was not right. He had a point. I mean,
Killmonger's actions were wrong, but his things he said were correct.
No, but we'll get to that. We got a podcast about that.
I mean, just like overpopulation is an issue. Like, there's a black and white way to say, like, overpopulation is an issue. Yes. You know, and if we can reduce waste, and also, like, if people are deciding that they don't want to live anymore, and they're older and at the end of life and quality of life is there, they can choose. Like, there's these very
tough decisions. So if you think Thanos and Killmonger were right, then you think the scientists were right.
No, here's what I said. I said Killmonger was right and Thanos had points. Like Thanos had some points. So that's, I flipped it, because Thanos did not, the answer to Thanos' problem was not snapping and killing Spider-Man, killing fucking Tom Sawyer. What's his name? Tom Holland. Yeah, his little flip. You know, he backflipped in the audition video. He's so cute. So that's not the answer. The answer is, The reality is that because of that acknowledgement, we have to change the way we live on a regular basis. There's no, like, mass genocide answer to this, because guess what? People are killing. The people are genociding all over the world right now, and we still have overpopulation. So I don't think that's the real issue. Whereas Killmonger, like, philosophy-wise, was correct. And he was just talking about the issues, the Pan-African issues of, like, continental Africans and people in the West. And I don't really believe that, like, nobody from Nigeria had to come here and, like, come reclaim us. That's not what I'm trying to say. More so just, like, in that movie context, he was right. And in the context of, like, this separation of cultures, he was right. But I will say that at this point in history, Black American culture is so distinct to me. Like, I'm so proud of it that I think it is, like, there's so many similarities, but it's not the same as West African culture. And I think we all know that. And I think that's okay. Because, yeah, I just think it's okay. Like, I'm fine with that. So anyway, I will say, though, like, obviously, if the continent of Africa was homogeneously Black and thriving, like, if it was the economy, the Black economy of Atlanta across Africa, and we couldn't go back, that's what Wakanda was in that instance. Anyway, that's my 3-minute thesis on why Killmonger was right.
So you support the scientists? You think
the
they were
scientists,
right?
First of all, they were scientists, so they have they breach all ethics, because if you want to experiment in that way, you go around to the town and say, hey, we're doing this experiment. Do you want to stay here and sign this consent form, or do you want to move? The mine will finance.
But they can't go nowhere. It's not that type of town where they could just move.
But the mine has the money. The mine, it's no different than Manifest Destiny. It's no different than the city wants to build a train track through your neighborhood and they pay you to get out, like, or they push you out. Like, I guess my point is, poisoning people who live there and lying to them and gaslighting them is not the only option. There's another option of, like, hey, we're experimenting out here, get the fuck out of here, or we'll pay you. Like, which one do you want? You can work here and we'll let you know. Like, people will work under those instances, because why? How do we know that? Because the water was already Black and people were like, the mine can't go anywhere, we don't give a fuck. Yes. So I don't think they really had to, like, be like, pump out more stuff and let's tell everybody everything's fine. Like, I think some people just are like, yeah, fuck yeah, I don't give a fuck. Pay me, and I'll put the money aside for my kids, and I'll just die. And there are people who will live like that. So that's why I think they were wrong. I think that Annie, I do think Annie was wildin', because who? Why? Like, first of all, you woke them up. Like, you could have very stealthily. There's such a quiet way to
she
ruin
was
that
wild.
Shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, she was in there like, rah, rah, and, like, slashing stuff down, neck stuff out. Girl, first of all, get a magnet and wipe the hard drives. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's other ways to do this. And I do think that I do think that there's a conversation about, hey, they're doing something really amazing here for the wrong reasons. There's ethics, but maybe this research can go on in a different way. And I think that I would have gone the like New York Times route or Washington Post route before I would do that, because it wasn't smart. It just wasn't a smart move.
Yeah, because the way they wrote it is that she was close to Clark, and that they wrote it in a way that like she kind of understood what the fuck he was doing there. Like it wasn't that like she was just completely oblivious to his work at all, and it was just like, oh, I can't believe you're doing this. It was that like she kind of knew what she was doing there. So they want you to believe that they had a real relationship. So I can't believe at no point Clark was not like, yo, we just had a breakthrough. We figured this thing out.
Yeah. And I also don't believe that. Go ahead.
It would be unbelievable to me. But maybe I'm saying this as a point of privilege because I'm not dealing with that trauma, right? So like that's why I'm not on the people that I was reading side, because I was like, there's a level of privilege when you're not the one experiencing that, where you get to look at, like, I say this all the time. Like, I am a progressive person politically, but I say this all the time about like police reform. Cause like when you read actual real polls about police reform, the people who live in the areas that are most affected by this are the people generally who are most pro police, right? So like the people who live in the areas that are mostly highly over policed, over patrolled, are often the most abused. Those are also the people who are like, no, I don't want to defund the police. I don't want to get the police, right? Yeah. And I think there's like an academic thing that like a lot of, in the political community, a lot of Black academics, people who moved away from there, who are now in like suburbs, a nice area, and we can look at it from 30,000 foot view and be like, yeah, this is bad. Police are bad. Get rid of the police. We don't want the police. And then the people who are there are like, no, like I get all the bad stuff that you're saying that they do, but like I still, and it's like this convoluted thing where, so like I'm not in that town, or the person writing that's not in that town, and that's not the situation that you live in. But if I was in, I was in Baltimore where they had a lead problem, right? Like they had lead paint problems in Baltimore. I personally wasn't affected, but they had lead paint problems in Baltimore. If you would have told me, you know, they put all these houses with lead paint that affected, you know, thousands and thousands of kids in Baltimore and how they grew up and things that they're dealing with now. But because of that, Alzheimer's is cured. No one will ever get Alzheimer's ever again. No one will ever get dementia ever again.
It has a Z, not a T.
It's
not Alzheimer's, like you made it to the Hall of Fame.
Well, I'm Black. You add S's on everything, too. If you could cure Alzheimer's and dementia and any of those brain injuries.
But Alzheimer's is so good.
And we had to do that by studying the effect of lead paint on people, right? That sounds ridiculous, but let's just say that was true. I living in Baltimore would feel differently than, you know, John MBA or John PhD, Black person who lives in, you know, Baldwin Hills in LA, who's like, yeah, this is fucked up. Like, you know, you would feel differently when you're in something, right? So I think being away from that, you can look at it from a bigger point of view and be like, oh, maybe that was worth it. But from the point of view of the people in the story, it shit wasn't worth it.
I hear what you're saying, but I think I would reformat it a little bit from my perspective, like, because I think it's like, they should not build Cop City, right? Like, they need to not do that.
Yes.
But I do think,
of course not.
But I do think it's possible for people in the metro parts of Atlanta to be, or not in the inner city parts of Atlanta, to be like, yo, we need better, like, police have to be here because of XYZ, but y'all still have to do ABC better.
Y'all got
to
be better, yes.
Yeah, I think that's the better, that's like more realistic to say than like, but I think people try to simplify, like, oh, they need police. It's like, no, they don't need bad police. Like, they need what you originally said it was for. They need like the actual true design of what this social service is. I think that's what we're saying. And I think a lot of people are like, then they take what they can get. And that's what the academics are saying. Hell no, like, we're not taking what we can get. So if that's all you're offering us, fuck off. And we'll build the nonprofits, and like, there'll be a bad state of being for a while, but we'll re-regulate because people built this shit anyway. But with
those academics aren't in those areas where they would be affected by that. Point.
I mean, you know, but with Annie, I actually have it another way. I think that It's insulting to think she would be that emotional. That like Annie was smart as fuck. Why would she
Yes.
go and do a rampage with and under and scream of where six white men are sleeping? Like, I don't believe she trusted them other white men when she was even with Clark. There's no way she was like, oh, those are my
Yes.
homeboys. I trust them. That's what I'm saying. So I'm like, she's not down there in the middle of the night doing her own thing, that upset out of nowhere. I don't even,
Which
that's
is
the problem
why I
for
said
me.
it's an unreliable narrator. I don't know if
Okay,
that's
fair.
how it
Oh
went
yeah, I
down.
mean exactly. Okay, and if you say it like that, I think I can see the argument. I just from what I saw before, I was like the show was true to flashback, but it don't matter. But I do think that like that's one way to think about the character. So people are mad because they're kind of like, well, people are mad because they're like, okay, if this is how it happened, what Annie did precipitate. Like first of all, they clearly overreacted. Like let's be very clear. Like.
Yes,
Like,
obviously.
this is when you call the police. You know what I'm saying? But it's like for them to get, I think it really just shows that they had already made a decision together that individual lives didn't matter to them more than legacy. And this idea of what they were
Yes.
solving and like ethics meant nothing. So I think that like mass murder group jumping is real. That was realistic as fuck because they were already too far gone because they had already decided that those 12 stillborns were like collateral damage that was necessary for them to have their Nobel Peace Prize, right? And they would have done that and taken all the accolades, knowing they had literally murdered people. So they were already too far gone. And I think that's the way to think about it. So did they have a reason why they did those evil things? Yes. And you can see the reason and the rationale, but like that's because we don't have enough villains that make sense for y'all to understand that like most villains make sense. You just have to be like, no, I have these standards I already decided on that fit it. Because I still to this day want to write a film about a black woman superhero who goes bad and becomes a villain. And I feel like she's gonna have points. Points will be made. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like
Yes, the
so,
best villains, you can
yeah.
understand why they're bad, but they need to
Exactly.
be clearly have done something that makes them bad. That's why they're
Like
a villain.
you know who I, I'm sorry to say this. I'm so sorry to say this, but you know what villain I understand?
Who?
Heath Ledger's Joker.
Oh my gosh. Now we have to question, y'all listeners have to question the morality of this person that I'm doing a podcast with. Please,
This is
we need
not
to make
real. None of
sure.
this is real. All these rules only matter. We adhere to them. This everything is truly chaos. That's a foundational belief for me. So anyway,
Yeah, like Ryan Coogler, when he was talking about Killmonger, he was saying, like, I wrote Killmonger so people could identify where he comes from, but I also wrote him in a way that I did not want people to think he was good. And like one of the
yeah,
things
he
that he
didn't
said
have to
was like,
burn all the flowers. That
well,
was
one of the things
crazy.
that he said was like, how he treated the black women, right, in the movie. And Ryan Coogler was like, he did that on purpose to show, like, this is not a good person. This person has points. He's coming from a point of pain, but he's not
He's
going
a
about it
hotep.
the right
He's a
way.
hotep.
Yes,
But not a
exactly.
lot of people
Yes.
caught that because they were so like, they're not
Well,
that
the
bothered by
hoteps didn't
men
catch
treating. Well, they're not
that.
that bothered by men treating women badly.
Yeah,
Yeah, exactly.
exactly. Yeah, a perfect point. So let me ask you this about this because I know we've got to wrap it up soon. Do you think that this show fits in the true detective narrative? Like how much in the beginning of the show we got a lot of detective-ing. And I like the detective-ing of the show where Liz is like, you're not asking the right questions, right? That was the theme of this show. Like every detective movie has like how the detectives operate, like their thing. And Liz's thing was, you're not asking the right questions. Like you gotta ask the right questions to get to the right answers. But in the latter episodes, it wasn't a whole lot of detectiving going on. So, like, do you think that this show fits in the True Detective series because they purposely loop things in, or do you think this would have been better as its own show, just Night Country? Like, this was just called Night
Yeah,
Country.
I think there's a such thing as like, speaking of unreliable narrators, I think viewers are the number one unreliable narrators because everybody's acting like every episode of True Detective was like written from like Columbo came back and wrote through the writers, and you've never seen the detective being like this before. Like there was all of those had a moment where you was like, what the fuck? Like even the first season ending is kind of like, okay. Like whenever somebody reveals an underground lair, they had a plot line that was running the whole time that they just hoped you didn't think that twist was too far, right? So I think in general, we might be over glorifying it because it's that first season stood up the test of time, and then two, three kind of came and went. But like Mahershala had a, speaking of Alzheimer's, Mahershala suffered from Alzheimer's in that season. And there was like this backup, there was like some type of play with past and present, I don't remember, or future, present, past, whatever. Like that was like interpretive, and there was like other shit going on there. Like I don't think, I think True Detective is not a straight up, it's never been a straight up procedural show about detectiving. Half of it is solving a crime, and then you realize halfway through there's some other shit going on. That's my take on it. So if it was Columbo and Columbo ended like this, I would be like, hell no. Like if a Monk episode went off the, it had an underground ice cave, I'd be confused. But this is actually on par for it. I think that
I
we
can't
also
believe you
need to
watched
be very,
Columbo.
I love Columbo. I've seen almost every episode of Columbo. I've also seen a lot of Matlock. Like I, those are my comfort shows. Anyway, so I think that if anyone also loves Columbo, Matlock, and Heath Ledger, the Joker, we could talk. So I think in general, though,
And
like,
Thanos in Killmonger. We know
I
where
don't
he
not, I
is,
don't fuck
though.
with Thanos. I'm just saying that you cannot say that Thanos is not pointing to an issue that we deal with. He just had a crate, he had a solution I don't agree with. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? I don't like it, but I'm just like, he wasn't on there saying people forget Marvel people bad. He wasn't not making sense. He was saying, he was speaking English. It's like when I say things people don't understand me, I say, am I speaking English to you? Like, what is, I don't understand how you don't understand. I'm speaking English. So anyway, and I'm not saying that to be rude. It's just like a friend. I'd be like, what language just came out of my mouth? Did I not say English? Because I don't, I thought I said English. I don't say that to people who don't speak English as a first language, by the way. So anyway, I just think that, yeah, I think it did what it had to do, and I think we need to keep in mind always that as viewers, we are not used to seeing women in these roles, and it is a very real thing that our brains process women shows differently. It's just like that's the whole thing about like representation and why it matters and the psychology behind bias and all that shit. So I say all that to say that, you know, give it some time, right? Like let it sit with you, see if you really, really hate it as much as you think you do, because I don't think it's as bad as we think it is. That's
Yeah, I
me.
thought it was. I thought the series. I thought it was okay. Like, it wasn't great. It definitely wasn't bad to me. I can see why certain people were taken aback by this episode. But I mean, if I had to rate this on a scale of 1 to 10, it's like a 7. Like, it's a good show. Like, to me, a 6 is an average show. This is above average. It's an above average show.
And they acted their asses off. Like that scene I played where she told her, I have no mercy left in me. Man,
Well, yeah,
you know what I'm
Jodie
saying?
Foster was great, and I thought Kylie
And
Reese, for
that
someone who
was a
does not
great
have a
breakout
lot of
role.
experience, yeah,
Great
someone does
breakout
not have
role.
a lot of experience, and had to be on screen with someone as seasoned as Jodie Foster, she held her own. She was very good, and I think she's going to get other roles out of this. I would like to see her as like a Bond villain. Like, I think she would be a great like villain.
Oh, I'm glad you said villain. You know what? You're right, because I was about to say, what, you know, like the Bond hose, but that's
No,
not
not the
good for
Bond
her.
hose.
But I would like,
Not the Bond hose.
I would like for, you know what I would like for her to do though? I would like for her to be a Bond hoe that's a villain.
Oh, like a secret
To
villain?
John Boyega as James Bond. I don't think I'll ever
Okay.
get that though.
I don't think that's as far-fetched as you think. I think they consider it a black Bond. Well, they
Yeah, I think
did.
the thing about John Boyega is he's tired of your racism. He's tired of every time somebody mentions him, they go, oh, the Negro. Like, he's just tired of it. Like, he said, he was like, I don't even want to fuck with Star Wars no more. Y'all are fucked up. And I.
You're talking about the fans.
Yeah. Oh, is that? Yeah, yeah. He's talking about like how people, like, as soon as they say, James Bond could be black, he's like, you're ruining original content. This is not my Bond or whatever the fuck. So, anyway, we have a season. You know, guys, we came back for this show. It was a great, I just realized I should have did all of that in a British accent, but it's too late to go back. No, we had a great show. This, you know, like it or love it or hate it, we did it with you guys. We came back consistently. For me, it was the beginning of a semester. For y'all, beginning of a year. We watched True Detective together. We got back into it. I definitely think this is a good prequel if you wanted to go fuck with season one of True Detective and see if it all aligns, and that could be interesting. I don't think like chronologically, I feel like I didn't feel like that show, this show was set in the 90s, so I don't know if it all aligns, but you can let us know. If you listened to the show and left it and came back to give us a chance, we hope that you are happy that we have segmented our chatting in the beginning or end with some timestamps ish, and we are definitely giving you the recap of the show you asked for. We will be on a little spring break.
Chanel's going to Freaknik. So when she comes
back, I'm going
to
Freaknik.
When she comes back, we're going to do the second half of Invincible. This time,
yes, exactly.
Episode by episode.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to come back in the second week of March. So you will not hear from us. You know what we do? Excuse me. We do need to do like during the next like winter break, or time when I'm actually have time off, because we need to do some backlog episodes that we can drop when time's not happening. I'm also asking Brandon to hurry up and watch Industry because I think it's worth watching. And we also have Reservation Dogs that have been that Megan had requested months, years ago. We're always open to other shows you guys like, but Invincible will be good for us. We love, you know, any type of, we love everything that Prime does animated, to be honest with you. Like, all of their superhero content is raunchy as hell. We need it. But we're also open to other things. There are some shows we missed out on, too, that are good. And we'll keep doing, like we never did our Who Cloned Tyrone. And I just want to say that I, you know, already know I'm a John Boyega stan. I would marry that man. He's a man of sterling character. But anyway, I really enjoyed that show, and I mean that movie, and I thought that Jamie Foxx was a great pimp, and we never sat up and talked about it, and I just wanted to, like, that's remissful, because I think we would have had fun. So if you guys, we might do one-offs here and there. If you guys have stuff you wanted to hear us talk about, let us know. Before we say our goodbyes for real, we said at the beginning, the email is wewaspod@gmail.com. You can listen to We Was Podcast on all streaming platforms. We'll be We Was Invincible shortly. So always search We Was Podcast if you're trying to find us. But our anchor does not change. So it's anchor.fm/We Was Podcast. I'm Chanel. That's Brandon. You can follow us on social media. It's in the show notes. And please like, rate, review on Spotify, but Apple Podcasts is where we're taking a beating for no reason. Give us 5 stars, write a review, help our tick go up, help us stream, help HBO to notice that we need to be the official podcasters for the show. Brandon, what do you want to add before we wrap up?
Nothing.
I take all the air out the room sometimes. Okay, guys, thank you for listening. We're so excited to have you guys back. Stick with us through our little break. In the meantime, you can go watch Prestige TV and Vanity Fair and all the other shit. Go watch Jeezy's Tiny Desk. If you don't know Jeezy, go listen. It's pretty good stuff. He definitely, I love that I'm promoting all these things that definitely need our help, right? And then also go check out, what was the name of the show? Go please check out Alaska is the Center of the Universe for a very serious Alaska take. And yeah, we'll miss you guys. Take care. And in the meantime, stay detecting.